Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Bill Pickett. I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case, Eddie L. Ford. The issue before the Court today is whether there was sufficient evidence at the trial court to support Mr. Ford's claim that he was booked into jail in retaliation for his speech.
Let me ask you, just so that we focus what we are talking about and what we aren't talking about. Now, I know that, you know, my understanding is that the district court said that there was no First Amendment violation and granted summary judgment to the city on that point, did not reach the second prong, did not reach the qualified immunity issue. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct,
Your Honor. But you both briefed that. And
we did.
Now, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, just so that you are not challenging, the district court found that there was probable cause to arrest or detain, I guess, at the time that your client, I watched the video, I'm sure that we all did, and that when he pulled over, jumped out of the car, proceeded to the officers, there was a confrontation, and there was probable cause to arrest for a noise violation. At that point, then it moves into, so you're not challenging the probable cause to arrest at that point.
We are not.
And so it's undisputed that there was probable cause there. So then it goes into, there's a statute that allows the officer discretion as to whether to cite or book at that point. And so then we have an interlude that follows there. And so if the officer had just arrested him right there, taken him to jail, and booked him, we wouldn't be here.
We wouldn't be here because we would not have the officer's own stated what are essentially admissions on the record of why he took Mr. Ford, why he decided to exercise that discretion. And the issue is, did he exercise that discretion in a manner that violates Mr. Ford's First Amendment rights? And the record is chock full of statements made by the defendant officer, Mr. Urlacher, saying things like, if you shut your mouth, I won't take you to jail.
I guess what I'm struggling with here is that, and I think it's undisputed that there's a statute that allows for discretion. So the officer, and it points out certain things about the exercise of discretion. And I'm assuming by your work, if you do these cases regularly, or anyone that has had any foray into criminal law, generally speaking, there's generally discussions that, you know, people getting arrested, stopped for traffic things, any number of things, even though your client, it seems undisputed that your client stopped without having the lights put on him. That I'm wondering, it's commonly to determine, is someone getting the point of what you're saying? Are they going to be compliant? Are they going to be safe? There is an evaluation of conduct, and that conduct always involves language. If we were to accept your premise, is every time that someone's not happy about being arrested or gives lip to the officer, as it were, which is not an uncommon issue on the street, is there always a tribal issue that they're exercising their First Amendment right?
No, Your Honor. Absolutely not.
So, I mean, I'm seeing where you're going, and I'm concerned that, because I know that I've rarely seen happy people in the arrest situation.
Right.
And so is everything a tribal issue, you know?
It is not, Your Honor. And the difference in this case are the admissions made by Officer Urlacher at the scene. He doesn't say, shut up so you can listen to me. And if you look at our excerpt of records, starting on page 52 is where you start to see the discussion and how it very centrally focuses in on telling Mr. Ford, if you run your mouth, I will book you in jail for it. He goes on to say, if you keep running your mouth, if you have diarrhea of the mouth, I will take you to jail. He then told Mr. Ford, after he was handcuffed, that you're going to jail because you wouldn't shut up.
But why isn't that conduct that you're not compliant? You know, why it, I mean, that is one way to, that it is also, if a person keeps arguing with you, they're not getting the point, you pulled me over, his first words out, you pulled me over because I'm black and I'm driving a Cadillac.
Yes.
Okay.
Let me just say here that I thought even more important were his statements to the other officers. I don't know if I'm going to book him yet. I'm going to see if he'll shut up.
Yes.
So he's under arrest for the city noise ordinance right now. If he shuts up, I'll let him go with a ticket. If you would have acted like a human being toward me, I would have treated you like a human being, et cetera.
And that, Your Honor, is an improper exercise of his discretion as a law enforcement officer. We will concede these officers are faced with situations where they have to exercise their discretion. However, the Constitution prohibits them from exercising that discretion in a manner that violates a constitutionally protected right. And under the City of Houston versus Hill case, it has long been set that verbal criticism of police officers is perfectly acceptable, and we cannot be taken to jail, nor, more importantly, can an officer say, I usually, like Officer Erlacher said, I usually write a citation and let people go. But in this case, because you would not shut up, I'm taking you to jail. That smacks right at the heart
of
citizens.
Yes, Your Honor. Does it make a difference in the manner in which the objection is made? This one just sort of a simple little thing. I certainly don't agree with your doing this. This was a guy who was shouting at him. Does that make a difference?
I think if Mr. Ford were charged with obstruction, Your Honor, which he was not, so there is no evidence that he obstructed the law enforcement officer's ability to perform his duty, that would make a difference, because then it's not speech in that context, it's conduct. And in this context, in this case, it's clear from the admissions and a reasonable jury, more importantly, a reasonable juror or jury could take the words, the admissions by Officer Erlacher, and take it right to the heart of the case and say, you know what, his words say he booked this man because he spoke.
And let me ask you this. On the clearly established part of it,
yes.
You mentioned the City of Houston. Is that your clearly established law?
That verbal criticism.
Was there probable cause to arrest?
I do not know if there was a PC issue. The PC issue here, Your Honor, goes to the Skoog case, where in an ordinary retaliatory arrest case, probable cause is not an issue, and that's according to Skoog versus County of Clackamas. That is 2007.
Where there is probable cause to arrest, and he could have just done it right there, and he doesn't have to try to give the person an opportunity to calm down. You know, he just says, I don't want to deal with you. I'm just taking you to jail. Then all is well. Then what's the clearly established law in this situation where if you try to wait and you interact with someone, that then suddenly it's clearly established that you've moved into First Amendment 4A?
Well, the first clearly established law is under Skoog, and that is that probable cause doesn't wash this case out. The absence of probable cause, or what probable cause, isn't an issue.
But how does the presence of probable cause, where there is the presence of probable cause, you could have arrested him, but you don't,
right,
and you wait to see if things get better, how does that, you know, how is an officer clearly, how is it clearly established that an officer, if you try to give a person a chance to calm down, that they've now violated the First Amendment?
You're violating the Constitution, the First Amendment, when you tell the person, shut your mouth or I'm taking you to jail. That's clear. That is clearly established. We have the right under the City of Houston versus Hill case to engage verbal criticism. And officers, while they may not like it, while I may not like it, or the court may not like that,
even if you had probable cause to arrest them before that,
then arrest them. In this case, probable cause isn't an issue because Skoog says that probable cause in the retaliatory arrest setting, the absence or the presence is not factored into the consideration. And the police know that because that decision predates Mr. Ford's situation. And they know that under that case, under Skoog, if you cannot retaliate in a way that chills speech, clearly Mr. Ford, any citizen's right would be chilled if an officer says, shut up or you're going to jail, and if you shut up, I'll write you a ticket. That chills speech, and the but-for analysis is met here as well, because the officer, again, himself, his own words say, I would have given you a ticket, but you wouldn't. You talked yourself into this. We've established both prongs of that test. I'll reserve 2 seconds.
Well, no. Well, okay. We've got some questions, so we'll,
I'm watching,
you know,
time.
We, that, okay. Yeah. No, I appreciate you doing that, but I think that there's some interesting issues.
I do have a question I'd like just to insert here. Yes. And that deals with qualified immunity.
Yes.
If we hold that there was a First Amendment violation, why shouldn't we remand on the question of qualified immunity?
You could remand on qualified immunity. However, there is, if you look at the Saucier versus Katz analysis, and you say under the first prong, there is a clearly constitutional protection to criticize police or disagree with them. And then the second analysis, would an objectively reasonable officer believe that what they're doing is wrong? They would absolutely, in this case, have to not only believe it, but know it's wrong to say to a person or to arrest a person because of speech. Now, the officer tried to combat that at his deposition and offer up some self-serving responses like, well, I was afraid of that Mr. Ford would be a danger to himself or the community. That is not, there's nothing like that in that Coban video. Nothing. All there is the officer saying, it's his words, it's his speech, essentially, that is condemning him in this case. If you don't shut up, I'm taking you to jail. Officers can't do that, not in America.
So are you encouraging us to reach the qualified immunity issue here?
No, I'm not.
It has to be reached somewhere.
Well, I think you can. I think you clearly.
Because you just said, I understood you to say, when Judge Nelson asked you, should we remand it, and you said, well, no, because it's clearly established that he couldn't do what he.
My apologies. Yes. No. Remand. We do want to remand. We want to remand for trial. And not.
But they still have to. He still has. No one's looked at qualified immunity.
I thought the judge had looked at it. I apologize for that. I thought Ms. Judge Succo had looked at the qualified immunity issue. I may be incorrect on that.
At any rate, yeah. As I understood you, you have no objection to remanding.
I do not.
But as I heard you arguing, there are enough facts here for, as a matter of law, for us to say there was not qualified immunity. Am I understanding you correctly?
Precisely, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll get, depending on what we hear, I probably will give you a little rebuttal.
Thank you.
So, because we want to hear the arguments here. Thank you. Not like we don't want to hear other people, but sometimes we have more questions than other times. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Tom Miller. I'm the attorney for the city of Yakima, Officer Urlacher and Lieutenant Wentz, who's here in the courtroom with us today. This is absolutely a case about actions and not words. Mr. Ford's actions drove the decision to book him into prison or into jail that night. You've reviewed the Coban video. This entire episode was captured on video. And it begins with Mr. Ford, without any explanation whatsoever, getting out of his vehicle at a stoplight when a police officer is behind him, without his emergency lights even activated, and challenging that police officer with a physical gesture, basically throwing his arms up in the air as if to say, why are you behind me?
Well, that is not normal. Apparently it's conceded that there was probable cause to arrest him.
Absolutely.
At that, and so, but that's what I think, so we're there. So then the question is, when the officer exercises his discretion at that point going through there, and, you know, and I expressed my concern to appellant's counsel in that, I've read a lot of police reports, I've seen a lot of criminal cases, all of that, that frequently people aren't cheerful about the fact that an officer is going to either give them a ticket or arrest them or anything along those lines. So, you know, lip is not a part, and I think that commonly officers look at that to determine, is this person compliant? Are they going to do what I say? Are they going to appear? Are they, you know, can I let them out? But he does make these statements like, hey, you know, you bought yourself, you know, basically you're going to jail because you run your mouth. And so how do we assess something that we know that probably happens all the time when officers are dealing with people? And what's First Amendment? What's conduct? all of that? And where does the probable cause component, how does that figure into all of it? Since the appellants confessed if he had arrested him right there, there's no case.
Right.
Well, then you kind of say, well, no good deed goes unpunished when you're trying to say, can I cite you or arrest you? I'd rather not take you to jail, but if you don't get under control, you're going to go to jail. So what do we do here?
Well, it's critical that we look at the record in this case because Officer Urlacher, when he is transporting Mr. Ford to jail, he says, you're going to jail, number one, because you acted or because you violated the city's noise ordinance and because you acted a fool. He's not talking about words. He never says to him, I don't like what you're saying, you're going to jail. It's the act of talking. He's not listening. And Officer Urlacher makes that clear both on the Coban recording and also at his deposition. I was trying to get a point across. He wasn't listening to me. That tells me, as an objectively reasonable officer, that this person isn't getting the message. He's got information from Lieutenant Wentz that says, look, I've had prior interactions with this guy. He broke someone's jaw. He's prone to violence. Let's put him in jail for the night. Let him cool off. And that goes to the statute, which is actually a criminal rule for courts of limited jurisdiction where officers are allowed discretion to book a suspect into jail if it appears reasonably necessary to prevent physical harm or to prevent a breach of the peace.
Yet, what do we do with the all the statements? The reason why you're going to jail is because you wouldn't shut your mouth. It wasn't because the way you were acting or anything. It's because you wouldn't shut your mouth.
Well, and Judge Hugg, the distinction there is, it goes to the act of he's busy talking, he's not busy listening. The officer is trying to assert control over this very tense and uncertain and admittedly by plaintiff, rapidly evolving situation. Mr. Ford, as soon as he pulled his car over for the traffic stop, jumps out and dares Officer Urlacher to use force. He taunts him, saying, you better use some force. That puts an objectively reasonable officer on notice that this person may be violent and he needs to proceed accordingly. And as
but
part
that
of that...
That isn't what the officer said. The reason he was sending him to jail was because of any of those actions or anything. It was because he wouldn't shut his mouth.
Well, he says to him in the patrol car, he says, because you acted a fool, because you violated the city's noise ordinance violation. And he talks about acting. He doesn't talk about words. He talks about acting. You acted a fool.
But what, at excerpt of record 104.
Okay.
So he's under arrest for the city noise ordinance right now. If he shuts up, I'll let him go with the ticket.
Right, and that goes back to he's too busy talking. He's not listening. And Officer Urlacher clarified that at his deposition as well, where he says he refused to listen. He was acting out of control and irrational towards police. If he had stopped talking, calmed down, settled down, Officer Acker may have made a different decision. But he testified that this was not a but-for motivation for the decision to book. I mean, the decision wasn't made until after he conferred with Lieutenant Wentz, who provided him with this additional background information about Mr. Ford and his interaction with Mr. Ford. And coupling that with the objective behavior that he observed that night on this traffic stop, that colored the decision to book him into jail.
But
why isn't there a tribal issue on that? If you give all inferences to, you know, on that, let's just assume that you give all inferences, which when you grant summary judgment, you have to give all inferences to the party that you're ruling against.
Right.
So why isn't the officer's statement a perfectly good interpretation of it, but then also what he's saying, another interpretation, and why isn't it up to, you know, that a jury could say, hey, he wasn't punishing him for exercising his rights. The guy was acting a fool and fine for the officer, but why is summary judgment, why isn't that a triable issue?
Well, because when you look at the totality of this exchange, rather than just these choice snippets that Mr. Ford is obviously focusing on, for every statement where he says shut your mouth or you go to jail, he's also then explaining later on that it is because of his actions. If you just acted normally, and treated me like a human being, you know, you wouldn't be going to jail.
So then the argument, though, if I play the devil's advocate here, the argument is if looking at the totality that all of that is going on, in order to sustain a summary judgment on that, it has to be give all the inferences, and as a matter of law, he cannot state a claim. That doesn't mean he wins. It just means as a matter of law, he cannot state a claim.
Correct. And going
well, back, I think we've got that marshaled. But, I mean, I think you've made the – we know what – we all watched the video.
Right.
So let's go to the qualified immunity. My understanding is that the judge below didn't get to that.
Well, he got – I mean, obviously it was all analyzed under the first step because he never –
Well, but you have to go to the second step to analyze for qualified immunity.
Right. And so we – because it's de novo, looking to the second step, even if you assume for purposes of summary judgment that there's a tribal issue on whether he violated his First Amendment rights, you still have to analyze whether there's any case law in effect on July 17th.
That's what I want to talk about. That's what I want to talk about. And so then the question is, let's just assume for argument's sake that we say that there's a tribal issue. Does the district court need to make that determine or is that something that this court can do? Is there anything? We have the video, you know, we've all looked at that. So if you're saying this court can do it, right?
Absolutely.
But now tell me, he listed, you know, the appellant's counsel talked about Skoog and I think City of Houston.
Correct.
Tell me why those cases are not clearly established law.
Well, they certainly are clearly established, but they're factually distinct. In Skoog, you know, you had a statement from – it was a situation where it developed over time. There was a meeting at a cocktail party or some sort of a fundraiser where this plaintiff has an interaction with the chief of police, and the chief of police tells him, you shouldn't sue police officers, and it wasn't right to sue cops. And taking that, and then there's this kind of long formulated decision over a course of days in which they – formulate a probable cause to charge this person with a crime, and then it turns out that the probable cause is...
All right, well, in this instance, we have a concession that there was probable cause when Mr. Ford, without being spotlighted, you know, there was no pullover, he pulls over on his own, charges out, accuses the officer of being, you know, racially motivated, and that he's being stopped for being a black man in a Cadillac, and he's a big guy, and he's charging at the car. So everyone agrees that there's probable cause.
Right.
Is that the appellant's counsel seems to say what the presence or absence of probable cause still that this officer should have been on notice that he was violating the First Amendment rights. What say you on that, or what would have to be out there? I couldn't find anything specifically in what here you have. Now we move into an exercise of discretion in terms of how an officer exercises his discretion as to whether to book or cite. Are you saying there needs to be something in that area to put the officer on notice?
I would say that absolutely, because as I pointed out in the brief, I mean, when a right is subject to a balancing test, and this has a balance between the PC and even if you assume that the words on face value establish a retaliatory motive, and there's no case putting him on notice that where you have not just strong probable cause, we have established probable cause in this case. It is unchallenged. It is the law of the case. He had probable cause as a matter of law. And as the Dietrich Court noted, you know, and you hit on this, Judge Callahan, in your first question to Mr. Pickett, that the Dietrich Court at page 901 says there's almost always a weak inference of retaliation whenever a plaintiff and a defendant have had previous negative interactions. And that kind of goes to any time there's an arrest made, the person is not going to be happy. And there's nothing putting Officer Urlacher and Lieutenant Wentz on notice that when you've got objectively legal bases for taking this person to jail to cool off for the night so they don't see him again later under worse circumstances. I mean, he's been acting erratically. He's challenging the officer to use force. All of those factors color this decision to book him into jail. And there's no case saying that where you have that and also where you've made statements indicating that implicates speech, you're now in retaliatory grounds. He had perfectly legitimate lawful bases for booking Mr. Ford in jail.
Let's say, Okay, let's say that he had the probable cause to arrest him, but then after, let's say the officer had said after that, I'm deciding to book you and not cite you because you are black. All right, that pretty clearly would say, okay, no, you can't exercise your discretion based on race.
I would think so.
Okay, so I don't think that's exactly what we have here, though. And so what we have here is the officer deciding, do I book or do I cite? And, you know, you're saying it's conduct, he's saying it's speech, but the officer is saying, you know, I have to, you know, I've got to decide whether you, you know, there's no doubt that I could book you, mm-hmm. but whether I let you go or not depends on how you behave, whether you appear to be compliant or anything along those lines. Are you saying that requires additional specificity in a case law to put an officer on notice that he needs to be thinking about the First Amendment of the Constitution?
I would say so, yes. There's no case that was established in July of 2007 that had the factual specificity that would be necessary to defeat qualified immunity.
Is there a case since that you think would put the officer on notice?
I have not seen one. And I think this Dietrich case is very strong because it, like this case, has strong probable cause and weak retaliatory motive. And I think this case is more similar to Dietrich in that sense, where the court found no constitutional violation and granted qualified
immunity. Is the second question about reasonableness, is that a question for the court strictly?
That is absolutely a question for the court, because it's the second prong of the Saussure qualified immunity yes. analysis, and that's a question that should be answered as a matter of law.
All right. In the second prong, can that decision be made by our court, or does it have to go back to the district court to be made?
No, it can be made by this court, because this matter is up on appeal on a summary judgment, and it's reviewed de novo. So we're looking at it with fresh eyes, and any time a qualified immunity defense is raised, you can, just because the district court didn't get to the second prong doesn't preclude this court from getting to that prong.
Well, it's raised in the briefs, isn't it?
Yeah, I briefed it.
Okay. Does anyone have additional questions? All right.
Thank you.
I'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. Or as long as our questions keep you. So.
Thank you, Your Honor. The case that sets the standard is the Skoog case, and the language that protects the right is the language where the court says, we've decided today that the right exists to be free from police action for which retaliation is a but-for cause, even if probable cause exists. That sets Officer Urlacher and the Yakima Police Department on notice that you can't arrest people for speaking. And more importantly, you cannot exercise your discretion in a way that violates that right that is announced in Skoog. And it's where I think, probably see things slightly different is the example that you used, Your Honor. Could Officer Urlacher say, I typically cite and I release, but you're black, and that because of that I'm taking you to jail? We would be outraged and say, absolutely not. The same is true when the officer says, I normally cite and release, but because of your mouth, your speech, I'm taking you to jail. The First Amendment stands strong and says, absolutely not. Just as strong as if this were a case about him being booked because of his race. It's there, and it's an undeniable right. The comments about Dietrich was clearly a case where the plaintiff was not able to establish causation. And the court talked about there being weak evidence of retaliation. We've got the strongest evidence of retaliation that there can be. We've got an officer actually making statements telling us, and in this case, hopefully telling the jury by his admissions in the COBAN, you're going to jail because you run your mouth. That is not allowed. And Officer Urlacher, clearly, the case law was established before this incident in Scoob that you can't retaliate against people because they speak. And you cannot just exercise that discretion in a fashion that violates the Constitution. And that's what happened here. Dietrich says...
You need to wrap up. You're over time. But just go ahead. Wrap up your last thought.
The PC issue is not dispositive. Not at all. And what happened at summary judgment here is that the judge, in looking at his order, said, well, I don't think any reasonable juror could look at this and conclude that this was a retaliatory arrest. We differ in that the evidence and all the jury has to do is believe what the officer said in this case at the scene, and they could find for Mr. Ford, and that would be very reasonable. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both for your argument. This matter will stand submitted.